Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of the performing arts here in the Bay Area. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, director John Tracy talks about the regional premiere of an important new play, Tree, by Julia Hebert at San Francisco Playhouse. Hanneke van Proosde, from the Baroque ensemble Voices of Music, shares details about their upcoming concerts, The Great Poets, which incorporates works from Shakespeare to Dryden and features soprano Anna Dennis. Kerry McRae and Kirsten Gunther from the new Fog Theater talk about the first show there, The Cable Car Nymphomaniac, based on true events here at San Francisco. Surprise, surprise. And composer Shinji Eshima, who also plays string bass with the San Francisco Opera and Ballet Orchestras, talks about upcoming premieres of his works. Stay with us. Appropriate for the forthcoming Black History Month of February is the regional premiere of a play, Tree, by Julia Hebert at San Francisco Playhouse. Its subject is the delicate balance of race and family and how connected we all are. It's directed by John Tracy, who is well known to Bay Area audiences as an award-winning director, playwright, designer, and educator with such companies as The Magic, ACT, and the Marin Theater Companies, among many others. Among other productions at SF Playhouse, he directed Man of La Mancha and Bloody, Bloody Andrew Jackson, as well as the acclaimed Breakfast with Mugabe at the Aurora Theater. Aforementioned awards include the Kennedy Center Meritorious Achievement Award, 15 North Bay Artie Awards, a Sacramento Ellie Award, and a Bay Area Critics Circle Award. John, welcome back to Open Air.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Now, the publicity does mention that this is an important new play. How so?
Well, I can only say how it's become important to me. You know, every piece you walk into and with the actors, you discover what resonates with you. And I think if I were, you know, interviewed yesterday, I might have a different answer the day before, a different answer. But I walk in today thinking so much about... I don't know what it is as a human being to live between our dreams and our hopes and our fears and harsh realities of things, and that not one is necessarily more attractive than the other, but there is this this connection we have to make personally between how we perceive our life is going to go and what is actually there on the other side. And to not necessarily go, well, no, that's not it. It doesn't look the way I want it to look. It doesn't feel the way I want it to look. That's not it. But instead to be able to look at what's there and go, well, maybe just because of my preconceptions being off, but maybe... this actually is it, and how can I embrace it as that? And I know, you know, you speak that it does deal with race, but it deals with something much larger than that. That's the idea of what blood ties are, and how we have this necessity to share and find blood, no matter how far away it may be.
Mm. Well, the playwright has written that she set out to write a play about race and ended up writing a play about family.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
So let's talk about the plot a little bit more.
Sure. All right. Well, Julia Baer wrote...
mangled her name. Julie Baer.
I've mangled it plenty of times for you as well.
As someone with a last name like LaTulipe, I should be a little bit more conscious.
Hey,
of,
now. It's
anyway.
All good. She gives us the story that wraps around four different characters, all of them on an adventure. A personal adventure. Dee Dee Marcantel, who is played by the wonderful Susie D'Amelano of SF Playhouse, is an Anglo woman who from Louisiana, whose father passes away. She has a very difficult relationship with him. But in his passing, what is unearthed is just a treasure trove of letters. And these letters speak to a time before her and a time before what she knows of her father, where he is clearly in love with an African-American woman. In the 50s. This leads her on her own adventure, thousands of miles to Chicago, to not only meet this woman, but this woman's son, who very well may be the son of her father. Therefore, they are half brothers. And she goes into the south side of Chicago, into the home of Jessalyn Price, who is a woman dealing with dementia, and Leo Price, Jessalyn's son, who is not only a chef, but is also a full-time caretaker to his mother. And of course, the fourth character, which is the next generation, which is Leo's daughter, JJ, named after her grandmother, and how she figures into the connection and the tug of war between generational memories and history, and how we get held back and stuck in those places, and how we want to pursue a future, how much of that we want to bring with us, how much of it we should leave behind. Between that, you get the four of them, and you get this, what was said before, this four people that have clear ideas on what life should be, and hopefully a connection to a philosophy and a dream, and they're met with real realities when they meet one another. It doesn't look or feel or sound the way that they wanted it to. So when you walk in with a skill set of beliefs, and you get through the door to find that those skill sets don't necessarily apply, and you're all lost, the great thing about being lost is that you actually get to examine who you are. And that's what the play presents to us.
That's a lot to take in an evening of theater.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned Semi Damalana, who is also the co-founder of SF
Absolutely.
Playhouse. Tell us a little bit more about the casting process for this.
Sure.
How did that happen? How did that go about?
That's great. Well, luckily enough, you know, I've had the great fortune to work with SF Playhouse multiple times, and it's funny. Even as I said to you, it's great to be back. There's a greater meaning to that with the SF Playhouse for me. It's always great to be back as a freelance artist. It's always great to be back, you know. But they gave me my first big break, which was First Person Shooter by Aaron Loeb years ago. And better than them even giving me that break is they've been unbelievably patient with a fledgling director who has, and they have given me work throughout the years and helped me develop my craft. I owe a lot to them.
Mm-hmm. So when you're casting something like this, are you concerned more with the interaction of how the characters interact before you say, okay, you got the role. Let's try someone else, how they work.
Yeah, of course. And it works many different ways. But there was also sometimes where these stars align. As a Playhouse, myself and Susie, I definitely wanted to work with Susie again. And I also had the great fortune to work with Carl Lumley over at Terminus in the Magic Theater a few years ago, and really wanted to work with him again. And the stars aligned that the two of them were very much in love with the script with me. And we knew that we had a trifecta there. And it was really the other two roles that we wanted to build into that puzzle. Kathleen Ridley, who's been in the Bay Area for quite some time, an amazing performer, is playing Jessalyn, and she and I have worked together from everything from her playing Aldonza in That Man of La Mancha, and what she spoke to her playing the Pirate King in the Pirates of Penzance over at Berkeley Playhouse, to go over to this role is a completely new adventure for us. But I'm so happy to have someone that I trust, and that's what it's about. You know, we have a treasure trove of talented people in the Bay Area. You find the people that you can trust, and that does not mean the others are untrustworthy. It means you find the ones that you connect with, you know. And to that trust, there's our fourth, Tristan Cunningham, who is I'd say up and coming, but she actually has all the work in the world right now, so maybe she's already there. She is a young, unbelievably talented actor that keeps us all on our toes, and she's playing JJ, Leo's daughter.
That's John Tracy directing Tree by Julie Hebert at the SF Playhouse. So tell me, where did you first come across Hebert's writing?
Well, I didn't know it, but acting like I came across it from watching television. She's been a television writer for the last few years. I think Numbers is basically hers, and she has a new one coming out. But she's a bit legendary to San Francisco. She grew up at the Magic Theater and spent quite a bit of time being just completely a connective tissue of what we do, and of course went off to pursue other things. And it's fantastic to have her back. We are lucky enough to have her in the Bay Area for most of this rehearsal process. She's in and out. We got her luckily because of another family thing that her daughter is having a child, so she's come up for the month to take care of that, and we get her at the same time. And it feels right when you think about family.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. Tree by Julie Hebert runs opening night is January 24th and closes March 7th. Information at sfplayhouse.org. John, thanks for coming by again today, and I wish you a wonderful run.
Thank you so much.
Hope to catch it myself.
All right. Take care.
See you soon.
Yeah.
Still to come this hour, a talk with Shinji Eshima, who is going to talk about his latest works and where they're being performed. We'll hear about the Fog Theater show, the cable car Nymphomaniac, and from the Baroque Ensemble, Voices of Music. Voices of Music, quite literally, as that is the name of the ensemble you've been hearing these past couple moments. Music from that ensemble's latest CD, In a Garden So Green, Lute Music of Scotland, with David Taylor, Archlute, who is co-founder of Voices of Music. Together with David, Hanneke van Proosdijk co-founded and co-directs Voices of Music. She performs regularly as soloist and continuo specialist with many local and international ensembles and studied at the Royal Conservatory in The Hague. Hanneke is a co-founder of the Junior Recorder Society in the East Bay and was the director of the San Francisco Early Music Society Medieval Renaissance Workshop for 7 years. She has recorded some 40 discs for a number of record labels, and it's a pleasure to welcome her to talk about these upcoming concerts of Voices of Music. Hi, Hanneke.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thank you.
So the program is called The Great Poets. How exactly is that reflected in the music?
Well, in the 17th century, this program brings us to 17th century England, and poets such as Shakespeare and Dryden are well known by people nowadays in reading and books. But back then they were famous also because people set these poems to music, and that's what we like to bring in this program. Things that people wrote about in the 17th century are still current for us today. It talks about love and death and losing people, and we hope to bring with this program beautiful music as well as beautiful poetry.
So what sort of works have you selected in this particular program that have that reflect this a broad variety of poetry? How did you choose? How did you whittle it down, in other words?
Yes, when you have so many good pieces to choose from, that is always a tricky thing. We will start in the early 17th century with poetry from Shakespeare, set to music by people like John Dowland, who was a court lute player. And then we go to mid-17th century, and we finish with the late 17th century with music by Henry Purcell, which people nowadays know as well.
Mm-hmm. And a very special guest soprano you'll have with you, Anna Dennis.
Yes, Anna Dennis is a soprano who lives in London, and she has been to the Bay Area here, I think, 2 years ago, maybe, or a year ago, I can't remember. And she's a wonderful singer.
She is the only vocal presence, then, in Voices of Music for these particular concerts.
That's right. We do instrumental music as well as vocal music, but our motto, Voices of Music, is actually in which each musician has a voice.
Well, tell us a little bit of the history of Voices of Music, then.
We started about we are in our eighth season now, and we offer concerts. We offer concerts with lots of different kind of music, music from the Renaissance, music from the Middle Ages, and music from the Baroque time. And we also put a lot of our concert videos online, free for anybody to see. And we currently have 10,000 people a day watching our videos.
That's amazing.
That is 3.5 million viewers a year.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And yes, it's been really wonderful.
Under what format? Under what venue? Online presence.
We have our own website, voicesofmusic.org, and a lot of the videos, we bring most of them out on YouTube, and people use them for teaching in colleges, for music appreciation classes. And so we started recording some of the better known pieces as well for this particular reason. And we just finished our Brandenburg project. We recorded Brandenburg 3 and Brandenburg 4 so that people can have access to this beautiful music, but also to background information that they can then use in educational settings.
Very nice. So you're actually using the web presence and the videos there in an educational way. Do you promote that in a different way than you do the actual concert performances?
Well, concert performances are local, so it's a very different thing. But we basically started recording our concerts and put highlights of those online so that people who don't live here also have access to this music.
This whole era of Baroque music and earlier is so vast. I mean, are you off to the libraries of Europe to find something new and interesting, or are you relying on that which is already discovered?
Oh, no. Part of the fun is doing all this digging and finding beautiful things. Of course, doing the bigger works is important as well.
Are there particular sources that you go to on a regular basis, or are you always discovering new places?
Well, we're very fortunate that nowadays a lot of the manuscripts are being put online, so it's easier, much easier to get access to the sources. But we also have a very nice library at the UC Berkeley Music Library. They have an enormous choice of microfilms and original manuscripts. And the archival work for us to dig and find is part of the fun for sure.
Well, what composer would you consider your greatest new find of old?
Oh, that's a very difficult question. I'm not sure I can answer that. Well, even the big name composers, we have found pieces that haven't been edited yet. And in fact, because we put all our music online, we make all our own editions because we have to deal with copyrights from 200 different countries. So we actually literally start with the library, make our own editions, share with our musicians, work with the musicians on the music. And so it's a very long process before it reaches the stage.
So Voices of Music has a core consistency of how many players then?
That depends on the program.
Sure.
Most of the musicians live in the Bay Area. We are very fortunate to have so many wonderful musicians in this area. The smallest groups that we do are 4 people. The biggest groups are 17 and anywhere in between.
And these concerts, I see, incorporate, I'd say, 10 to 12 players for these particular concerts this weekend, next weekend?
Yeah, I think we're 9, yeah. We have concerts in San Francisco, Mill Valley, Palo Alto, and Berkeley.
That's the 22nd through the 25th. The program is called The Great Poets, From Shakespeare to Dryden. Anna Dennis is going to be the guest soprano soloist, talking with Hanneke Prozdai. about these concerts. So your co-founder, David Taylor, we heard start things off with on that wonderful CD. How did you choose music for that? It's all lute music.
Well, this was a project that culminated into the CD. He's been working on this music for probably 25 years. Someday we were sitting together saying, well, you have put all this work and you've performed all this music. Let's put it on a CD.
Very nice. And you mentioned the Brandenburg 30 project, which isn't yet released, which we'll hear shortly. I mentioned again that these concerts are the 22nd in Mill Valley, the 23rd in Palo Alto, the 24th here in San Francisco, and the 25th in Berkeley. Great music ahead for you if you're interested in the Baroque and hearing some wonderful words set to music, the great poets from Shakespeare to Dryden. You can get more information at voicesofmusic.org. Hanneke van Proosdijk, thank you very much for coming in today. We're going to hear a little bit of the Baroque, your latest recording in the third movement of the Bach Brandenburg No. 3.
Thank you very much.
Coming again sometime. Thank you. third movement of Bach's third Brandenburg Concerto, soon to be released by Voices of Music. Information about them at voicesofmusic.org, including their concerts next weekend, The Great Poets, from Shakespeare to Dryden, with guest Anna Davis. I'm David Latulippe. You're listening to Open Air on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Still to come, a conversation with composer-bassist Shinji Eshima, who is here with Thalia Davis. Thalia Moore, that's the name, who's the cello soloist for Shinji's upcoming premiere of a work this coming Monday. Well, now through the end of this month, you can catch a bit of theater pulled from San Francisco history if you head over to the brand new Fog Theater at Z Below on Florida Street. Based on actual events of a 1970 San Francisco cable car sex scandal, this original musical has a book by Kirsten Gunther, one of my guests today, and music by Tony Asaro, and inaugurates this new theater space. Kirsten is joined here today by Carrie McCrae, Fog Theater's executive director. Carrie, Kirsten, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much for having us, David.
Well, Carrie, let's first start about, let's hear a little bit about Fog Theater, F-O-G-G Theater.
That's
Fog
right.
Fog being an acronym for Focus on Golden Gate.
Yes, we're here to bring original, high-quality, locally relevant musical theater here to the Bay Area. We are Bay Area artists. We tell Bay Area stories. And our mission was really inspired by the tenets of the local food movement. We see that we're going to source our stories here, our actors here, all for a Bay Area artists. All for a Bay Area audience. We often sort of joke with ourselves that we are really farm-to-table musical theater.
Okay, very nice. Delicious, no doubt.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this incredible story. It's completely off my radar. Who came across this story and thought about bringing it to musical life?
Well, we were searching for our first musical, and we knew that we needed to grab people's attention being a brand new theater company. So Tony Asaro, Fog Theater's artistic director and composer-lyricist of the cable car Nymphomaniac, did a web search on San Francisco sex scandals and came across the case of Gloria Sykes, who in 1964 moved to San Francisco from Michigan and was on the Hyde Street cable car. There was an accident, and she walked away from the incident with an insatiable sexual appetite. So over the course of the next few years, she proceeds to bed hundreds of men. And then in 1970, she sues the city of San Francisco for $500,000 in damages for turning her into this nymphomaniac. And the amazing part about it is, true story, she won her case.
Oh, my God.
She didn't win the full settlement, but she did get $50,000. So we thought this would be the perfect musical for our first production.
And an only in San Francisco story, no
exactly.
Doubt. So, Kirsten Gunther, are you playing that aforementioned cable car nymphomaniac?
I am not, thankfully.
Okay, all right.
Thankfully, I am not.
What is your role in the musical?
I'm the book writer, which is, I guess, now that we've had Smash on NBC, some people know what that is. But for the most part, it's just helping to create the story and being the sort of the spine of a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
And working with Tony, the composer lyricist, as he works, you know, writes the songs, and we collaborate together.
Well, tell us a bit about the creation of a new musical. Is it a workshop process? How many revisions do you go through to get to this final, or is it always in a state of creation?
I think it's always in a state of creation. This is a developmental production, so this is, we've only been working on this for maybe a year. Maybe a little
bit longer. A little over 2 years, actually.
2 years.
Yeah.
Time really goes by. Normally, a musical will take about 5 to 10 years. So something that I love about what Fog is doing is that they want to help all of the artists involved put things on their feet earlier so that you can see what you have, whereas in New York, it usually takes about 5 to 10 years before you get to see something at this stage. So that's been really interesting.
And in fact, Kirsten just gave me, I'm also acting in the show, she just gave me a rewrite as we were walking into the building today. So it's an ongoing process.
Nothing is etched in stone.
Exactly.
In this thing. So is the actual cable car accident recreated on stage?
It is. The actual accident does happen in the musical. It happens pretty early. But we do our best to sort of recreate the moment of Gloria hitting her body up against the pole in a theatrical context.
The pole.
And let's talk a little bit about the rest of the cast then and your creative team.
Well, we have an amazing group of artists who are creating this production. Our marvelous director choreographer, Terry Berliner, is someone I've known and worked with for many years back in New York as a native San Franciscan, fourth generation San Franciscan. We also have Rena Beth Apostle, amazing, wonderful actress, leading our cast as Gloria the Nymphomaniac. We have the charming David Naughton as Bruce, the lawyer defending the case, and Courtney Merrill as Bryce. And I'm also, as I mentioned, I'm acting in the piece along with award-winning actor Alex Rodriguez and Stephen Innes and Haley Lovegren.
Very nice. That's Carrie McRae, Fog Theater's executive director, here with Kirsten Gunther, the music, the book writer of this incredible music, The Cable Car Nymphomaniac, with music by Tony Asaro. So, Kirsten, I'm wondering, have you worked with Tony before on collaborating towards new creations like this?
We met actually in grad school in New York, and I think we had an assignment to write a song for Angels in America. That was the one collaboration we had, is we had to write the song together in
grad
school.
And where was this?
At NYU, grad musical theater writing program. And so that was all the only collaboration we had ever done, though we were close in school. We were good friends. And actually, Carrie played one of my thesis musicals. There was a workshop in New York of it after graduation, and she played the lead character in it, and that's how I met her. So I've actually known them all now for, oh my gosh, I don't know, maybe 7 years?
At least.
It feels like it was yesterday. But that's why it's also fun for me to have Carrie in this show, because I loved so much working with her in New York when she was there.
Very nice. And Carrie, it's kind of an ambitious thing to be opening a new theater when we hear of things closing left and right. You're fortunate to have a great infrastructure at Z Below on Florida Street. But I understand you also do performing arts classes for young people. What else is Fog Theater doing to keep afloat in this,
That's
in this
right.
day and age?
Well, we are funded, obviously, by a lot of generous Bay Area donors who, you know, are really standing behind our mission and our vision. And then secondly, you're right, we do have the other aspect of our company is a conservatory program. Right now, our conservatory is operating at the Telegraph Hill Community Center in North Beach, where we offer our musical theater classes to the youth there. And we're actually about to do our first kids production, The Noble Narble, by a local musical theater writer, Denver Casado, and that will be opening this spring.
Very nice. And what's happening after? You can catch The Cable Car Nymphomaniac through the end of this month. What's happening next on the stage?
We actually have several musicals up our sleeve. So this month we'll be doing a private in-house reading series of several new musicals, really looking to see what's the next show that we're going to get behind and produce in the next year.
And are these coming from fellow colleagues from New York, or how are you finding these new works?
You know, they're actually finding us. We've you know, over the past couple of years, cultivated relationships with a lot of very talented musical theater writers who live right here in the Bay. So they're musicals out here. They're just waiting to be done, and we're here to do them.
Well, you can submit your musical at their website, no doubt, Fog Theater, F-O-G-G theater.org, Fog standing for Focus on Golden Gate. Carrie McRae, as executive director, I wish you well, and I wish you a long history here in San Francisco in this venue.
Thanks, David. Hope to see you at the show.
And Kirsten Gunther, I look forward to seeing your work as well with Tony Asaro's writing.
Thank you so much.
Have a great run. Once again, information for The Cable Car Nymphomaniac at their website, fogtheater.org, F-O-G-G-T-H-E-A-T-R-E. .org. That's music not of Shinji Eshima, but of Beethoven from his Fifth Symphony, music which my next guest, Shinji Eshima, incorporates into his own works, including Raku, which had its world premiere with the San Francisco Ballet in 2011. Shinji is on the faculty at San Francisco State University and the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. His former students can be found in orchestras around the world, including the San Francisco Symphony locally, Utah Symphony, London Philharmonia, Montreal Symphony, and the Concertgebouw of Amsterdam. Fine art fans will be interested to learn that his instrument is the Plumarel bass from 1843, which is featured in the very famous painting by Edgar Degas, The Orchestra of the Opera. Shinji, who I'm pleased to call a dear friend as well, is going to have quite a 2015. Later in April, he'll have a new world premiere with San Francisco Ballet and Yuri Posikov called Swimmer. It's for full orchestra and includes four songs of Tom Waits, opens in April at the Opera House, subsequent performances later in the month. His ballet Raku also is returning to the San Francisco Ballet at the end of this month and will be seen danced by the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago. At the end of March, on the 31st, the free chamber music concert of the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra members at Piedmont Piano Company will include the world premiere of the second of his two movements for solo piano. And closer to this end of the calendar, his trio The Despot's Rage, The Slave's Revenge, for marimba, cello, and piano, was just performed last weekend as part of the Music at Cole Mansion Chamber Music Series. And this Monday, January 19th, we'll see the world premiere of his Es Musk Sein for solo cello, featuring his colleague from the Ballet and Opera Orchestra, Thalia Moore, both of whom joined me in studio today. Welcome.
Thanks, David. Nice to be here.
Of course. Shinji, nice work on the New Year's resolutions. I think you're doing pretty well. Obviously, these works are a long time in the hopper, in the cooker.
Yeah, but this is a tough act to follow, the cable car nymphomaniacs.
Well, maybe
this is a great opportunity to be here. Thanks again for having us.
Sure. Now, I mentioned these things are very many, many years in the making. Now, Raku is now in the repertory for this season, both here and in Chicago at the Joffrey. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Tell us, since it is in the repertory this year, why don't you refresh us of the story of Raku?
It's based on a true story of a Zen monk who burns the temple down in what is considered the most beautiful temple in Japan, in Kyoto, the Kinkakuji. And this ballet takes the idea, although nobody knows exactly why the monk burned this temple down. So this ballet speculates that he did it because of unrequited love. He falls in love with this beautiful princess, and the love's not returned, so out of desperation and frustration, she burns this temple down. That's the basic story.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you're using chanters from the San Francisco Zen Center, which just blocks away last week, where's the scene right on that street corner of some interesting violence.
Those Zen chanters, they volunteer to come in and chant the ballet, and they actually chant for this ballet all around the world now. They volunteer and they Skype each other to teach each other the chant. It's kind of amazing to have the San Francisco Zen Center do this. And it has become the core of this ballet, because the chant that they sing is the Enmeijuku Kanen Gyo, which literally translates to, "We are here to listen to your suffering, and we chant for your well-being." And that this recent shooting could occur literally on their doorsteps. And one of the chanters in the ballet, Victoria Austin, was the first to put up the flower memorial at the site. And they are returning, and I'm grateful to all of them and the work that they do around the world to show compassion, and that there's another way to live. And that has become really key to this ballet.
Well, let's hear that chant now that you incorporated into Raku. What exactly are they singing?
It is the Enmeijuku Kanen Gyo. And they came and offered this to the ballet. It's quite a story there. But this is track 7, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is As It Is, As It Happens in this ballet.
Music from Raku, and then more with Shinji Eshima.
Oh,
chanting of monks from the San Francisco Zen Center, a key part of Shinji Eshima's ballet, Raku. Shinji Eshima joining me in studio to talk a little bit more about that. Shinji, we opened our excerpt with you today with music from Beethoven. Now tell us how you're incorporating Beethoven's music into Raku and why.
Well, it's I was a friend of John Delancey, and he was the principal lobo of the Philadelphia Orchestra the entire tenure of Ormandine, and I happened to go hiking with him once, and he told me about the oboe solo in Beethoven 5 and how Beethoven was actually quoting John Dowland. That this piece was particularly popular at the time. So right in the middle of Beethoven's 5 comes this oboe solo out of nowhere, and that happens to be the quote of Dowland. And I guess you heard that at the top of this show. And so I take this oboe solo and quote it in the scene where the kimono flies up. And this is relevant because later on, what's happening is like I'm quoting Beethoven again for this piece for Talia Moore for the Earplay Commission, which comes up this Monday. But I guess, are we going to hear this oboe quote solo?
Let's hear that.
Okay.
Very subtle quotes from Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, the oboe solo, incorporated into my guest Shinji Eshima's work, Raku. Shinji, there's also some incredible solo cello writing in this ballet. What inspired you to go solo cello?
Well, Yuri Posikoff, the choreographer, who is a principal in Bolshoi and is the choreographer in residence now at San Francisco Ballet, his favorite instrument is the cello. So it was at his request that the culmination of this ballet, literally the prima ballerina Yuan Yuan Tan's solo, would be done to solo cello. And so as an example of cello writing, this is a clip of the finale of the ballet.
Music of Shinji Eshima, a brief excerpt from his work Raku, being reprised at the San Francisco Ballet and will be performed in Chicago with the Joffrey. Just beautiful writing. So lovely to hear that, Nessa. Later this April, you're having yet another work done by the San Francisco Ballet. Tell us a little bit about the origins of Swimmer.
Okay, this is another ballet with Yuri Posikoff, the choreographer, and it's based on a John Cheever short story also called The Swimmer, of which there was also a movie featuring Burt Lancaster, which has become kind of a cult movie. But this has been Yuri's obsession for 20 years now. He's been wanting to do this ballet. And he incorporates music and art from what he thinks is the most beautiful period in American history, that of the 60s. So we have music of Tom Waits, and we have the art of Edward Hopper. We have films from Marilyn Monroe. We do the literature of Nabokov, of J.D. Salinger, and of Jack London. All of this gets incorporated into this ballet somehow and weave together through the storyline of the swimmer. So you essentially go from swimming pool to swimming pool on your way home, is the analogy. You know, it's the struggle to find yourself at home. But Yuri uses each opportunity in each swimming pool to come up and reveal what he thinks is one facet of American beauty.
Those performances will be later in April. You can find out more about Swimmer, featuring the work also of Yuri Posokov, at sfballet.org. Well, this Monday is another landmark date for you. This you'll have the world premiere of Es Muss Sein for solo cello, featuring your colleague from the Ballet and Opera Orchestra, Talia Moore, who also joins us in studio. Hello once again, Talia.
Hi.
So, Talia, I'm wondering how you came across this work. Were you working with Shinji on it? How's his cello writing? Did you guide him a little bit?
Well, I think, Earplay thought of Shinji as a composer to write a piece in conjunction with the 30th anniversary. There are 10 composers that are each writing 3-minute pieces. They thought of Shinji because, you know, his style is really something that speaks to me. And he writes so beautifully for the cello. And I don't think they knew that we actually met in 1976 in the elevator in New York, Juilliard.
Right.
So, and you know, I was surprised to see him when I arrived in 1982. There he was, and you know, I got into the ballet in '89. There he was. So we have a really long association, and also I don't think Shinji knew when he titled his piece "Es Muss Sein" that I have this obsession with electric cars. I haven't bought one, but I'm looking at them all the time.
Well, let's talk about the title of this. You're playing on something there. It's Es Muss Sein with M-U-S-K all in capital letters. What's the story behind this title?
Well, it's kind of a play on words. It's a tribute both to Beethoven and to Elon Musk, who I consider a modern-day Beethoven. And Es Muss Sein is the quote from Beethoven's last string quartet, and it means, it asks the question, must it be, and then it answers it must be, Es Muss Sein. And I put Musk in there, suggesting that it must be Musk, because I just think of him as the most amazing Renaissance man. He finds solutions for the world, you know, a sustainable way to get from A to B with the Tesla. He also does Solar City, so I have solar panels from him. And the cellist that you just heard, David Kadarash, on that clip we just heard, actually bought a Tesla recently. One of the few musicians who can get one. But, I would certainly like one. And then the rocket program. Anyway, I just think that this is a man, a genius of our time, as Beethoven was in his. And so, as we went through earlier, I'm quoting Beethoven in this piece that I wrote for Talia, and also incorporating her unique gifts for the cello. It's also spectacularly beautiful playing. So, given this opportunity for Earplay to do this, has been a real joy for me.
The Earplay program includes works also by Henry Cowell, Linda Bouchard, Maria Christina Kasem, David Lang, Elaine Aberdam, Edmund Campion, Alan Shearer, Hai Kyung Kim. A wonderful program that's coming this Monday. Information at earplay.org. Talia, I wish you a wonderful performance of this, and Shinji, congratulations on the world premiere of that.
Thank you.
And we're going to end with a little bit of music from Swimmer. Shinji's work that will be premiered this April with the San Francisco Ballet. Thank you again for coming in, Shinji and Talia, and we hope to have you again and again.
Thank you very much.
Music of Shinji Eshima from Swimmer. music of Shinji Eshima that will be incorporated into his ballet Swimmer, SF Ballet, performing that in April. Information at sfballet.org. Earplay's concert is this coming Monday, earplay.org, to hear Shinji's world premiere performed by Talia Moore, S. Musk Zine. A number of remarkable concerts are happening over these next several days here in San Francisco, including tonight's Michael Tilson Thomas 70th Birthday Gala. We'll have a number of pianists on hand for Liszt's Hexameron for six pianos and orchestra. Quite a birthday celebration tonight at 8 o'clock. Happy birthday, MTT. And if you're free this weekend, you should try to catch the Soldier's Tale with the San Francisco Symphony. A great cast assembled. Also on the program, John Adams' grand pianola music. The main featured work, Stravinsky's The Soldier's Tale, with Elvis Costello as narrator and Malcolm McDowell as the devil. Those performances are Friday at 6:30, Saturday at 8, and Sunday the 18th at 2 p.m. KLW is a media sponsor for the Berklee Symphony. We'll be broadcasting the entire 2014-15 season of the Berklee Symphony in May on Monday evenings. Tonight at 8 in Zellerbach Hall, Joanna Carneiro leads the Berklee Symphony in works by Tchaikovsky, the Sixth Symphony, which we're hearing in the background, the Pathétique, as well as Asyla by Thomas Addis. Tonight at 8, Zellerbach Hall, berkleesymphony.org is the website for that. Some blatant self-promotion tonight is a dress rehearsal for me for this weekend's Peninsula Symphony performances. We're presenting the Golden Age of Hollywood with the Academy of Danse Libre, performing music and dance from Swing Time, An American in Paris, Broadway Melody of 1940, so much more, Slaughter on 10th Avenue. A great program with some incredible dancing going on. I'll also be giving the pre-concert talks at 7 o'clock if you're interested. Friday the 16th, tomorrow, at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center, and Saturday the 17th at Flint Center in Cupertino. Information at peninsulasymphony.org. Finally, the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, under the direction of Martin Segelka, will be presenting the third concert of its season on the 17th at Aragon High School. Included on the program are three West Coast premieres: Rolf Rudin's The Druids, Roy Magnusson's House Plants in Terracotta Pots, composed for Maestro Segelka and the Illinois State Wind Symphony, and the Symphonia No. 1, Caprecar, by Martinez Gallego. That's Saturday at 7:30, Aragon High School, San Francisco Wind Ensemble, under Martin Segelka. I'm David LaTulipe. It's been a pleasure bringing you this week's Open Air. Next week, Kevin Vance will be sitting in for me as I'm going to take off to Hong Kong for a week, just for the heck of it. Reminder that our programs are archived at our website, kalw.org. You can send me a suggestion for a program segment. Email is david@kalw.org. Thanks, as always, to producer Neil Swinkles for greasing the wheels of Open Air. Tune in next week. Thanks for listening. From Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, the Pathétique, music that will be heard tonight at Zellerbach Hall and the Berklee Symphony. BerkleeSymphony.org for more information.